KNOM's Exchange is back following the conclusion of Iditarod and our most recent race season. We're resuming our shows on the first and third Tuesdays of every month from 11 to 11:30 a.m. And today I've got a special guest calling in on the phone. We're talking about weather and climate conditions, sea ice, and more in Western Alaska. Before I introduce him, though, some questions for our listeners. What questions do you have about the lack of sea ice near your community? Are you interested in learning more about the causes and data collected by the National Weather Service on the lack of sea ice? How has your hunting season for walrus and whale been impacted by sea ice this winter? Do you have general comments or insights to share? Please join us, join the conversation by giving us a call, 1-800-478-5666, or if you're in Nome, 443-5221. And of course, you can always email us, exchange@knom.org. I'll be checking that email throughout the show here in the studio. And now let's get down to business and introduce our guests on the phone. We have Rick Thoman. Rick, good morning.
Good morning, Davis. Great to be here.
Thank you, Rick. And if you wouldn't mind introducing yourself using your full title, because I know it's a mouthful.
All right. So, yeah, I'm Rick Thoman, and I work as the Climate Science and Services Manager for National Weather Service Alaska Region.
Excellent. Thank you. And as most people will know, they're familiar with your name, but we saw you here last week in person at the Western Alaska Interdisciplinary Science Conference. And for those who couldn't attend, WASC happens every year, and it features a multitude of topics, including, you know, things such as falconry and different science going on in the region related to marine mammals. And then, of course, weather, which, Rick, you did a presentation on. So what was your presentation focused on specifically?
Well, of course, as everyone listening knows, it has been a remarkably low sea ice year across Western Alaska. The ice formed very late and was never able to really get established. Where we did have ice in many places, especially out away from the Norton Sound coast, ice repeatedly moved in and out, and so making very difficult conditions for travel and for subsistence activities, and it really quite remarkable. And so it was my privilege to be able to come to Nome and talk at WASC, kind of give an overview of what where we've been at for the ice season up to that point. And then not just kind of in the past and in retrospective, but also in looking forward, we want to understand why did we have this extremely low ice year. It sure looks like all the evidence we have that there has been no winter with this low of ice in the Bering Sea in more than 150 years. And that's really saying something. That's a long time. And it's not like it just was barely lower than the next lowest. It was far and away the lowest. So we did take the opportunity to explore some ideas, and this is very much work in progress, but, you know, why physically did we have such low ice? And it's pretty clear. There's not going to be one answer. It was a somewhat stormy winter across Western Alaska, but we've had stormier winters. This was above normal for sure, but not record storminess, and that even by itself points to the importance of what's going on in the ocean. And it sure looks like that the very warm ocean temperatures that we've had in the Bering Sea for the better part of 4 years now is playing a role as well. So we had the perfect storm, if you will, of we had unfavorable weather conditions for sea ice growth, and it was working against a Bering Sea that is warmer than average, both at the surface and at depth as well. And that's been the case for years. So it's really the perfect confluence of ingredients to produce this really extreme event.
Rick Thoman on the phone with us, joining KNOM's exchange program this morning. He's with the National Weather Service Alaska region. And you can call and join in the conversation by giving us a call, 443-5221, 1-800-478-5666. We're talking about sea ice, weather conditions, and recapping the winter. And Rick, let's kind of break it down. You had a lot of information in your presentation, but there was some missing from March. But now that March is over, what can you add from this latest month of data?
Well, no surprise, Davis. So March in the books now, and guess what? The lowest March sea ice extent by a long ways in our period of record. No surprise at all, given that we did have some recovery of the ice extent, at least. Quality is a different question, but to some extent during the middle of March. But then the storms picked back up, and sea ice extent fell again late in the month. And so so March goes in as the fifth consecutive month in the Bering Sea that the sea ice extent is the lowest of record.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, you know, fifth consecutive there. One of the other months, February, was pretty significant for Western Alaska. We had some interesting coastal storms that damaged buildings throughout the region, specifically having a big impact in Little Diomede. Rick, what can you share about the conditions that were recorded for the month of February, and, you know, how was that significant according to your data?
So, yeah, as you mentioned, around February 20th there, yet another one of the storms that impacted the region. Of course, okay, so a storm in the middle of February is not unusual for Western Alaska. What was unusual is leading up to that, we had open water or practically no ice in the ocean over the Gulf of Anadyr, west of St. Lawrence Island, and even right up into and even north of the Bering Strait. You know, there was talk that a foolish person could have sailed their sailboat from Gamble right up to north of the Bering Strait in mid-February. Really quite amazing. And then we had this storm come along on February 20th, and you know, as most listeners have no doubt seen the videos or experienced it themselves, we had considerable damage there at Diomede with high seas, pushed big giant size boulder sized pieces of ice way up on shore, and then some of that that ice area moved through, and the waves came in and cleared that out. But significant impacts to Diomede and all that open water. Again, the storminess, not unusual to have a significant storm in mid-February for Western Alaska. What's unusual is the lack of ice and all the open water that this storm was working on.
And Rick, I remember from your presentation, you know, you had a time-lapse video specifically for the month of February. You know, what kind of instruments, technology are you and the National Weather Service using to collect and organize this data?
So right now, of course, in the modern day and age, we have a wide variety of things that we can use to monitor sea ice. Of course, the very best, the highest detail we get is, of course, the experienced human eyeball, and that's where community observations are so important. You know, you can't beat that for the local level. We, of course, want to go up to larger scale, so farther than an individual can see from land, and so we've got a multitude these days of ways to do that. Some of that, you know, you can pick out stuff. If you're flying in and out of communities, of course, you get a bigger view. For the routine monitoring that we do, there are several different satellites that are in use. The one that gets used the most when you hear on the news about the Arctic sea ice extent is this, or the Antarctic sea ice extent is that. and that's derived from a specific sensors on these polar orbiting satellites. So they're in low Earth orbit, go around the Earth about once every 90 minutes. And the same kinds of sensors looking for the same types of information from the Earth's surface have been in use since the late 1970s. And that's the instrumentation that provides us this now 40 years of daily sea ice records. Now, that's relatively low resolution. You're not going to pick out very small stuff. In fact, generally, you know, it's about 20 to 30 miles is at a box is about the smallest resolution you're going to get. So it's great for looking at the very big picture. Here in the National Weather Service with the Alaska Sea Ice Program, they're using additional satellites that provide much higher resolution, and by resolution we mean the ability to see see what's the smallest feature you can see, and so that can use things like visible satellites, kind of like what you would see if you were riding around on that satellite, and also different sensors detect different parts of the energy coming off of the Earth's surface. And the Alaska Sea Ice Program produces a daily analysis based on a multitude of these sensors, from all the way from what people in communities report up to these satellites orbiting in space and sending back information multiple times a day.
Rick Thoman with the National Weather Service joins us here on KNOM. As he just mentioned, their satellite data goes back 40 years or so. But of course, locally, our listeners have thousands and thousands of years of knowledge and observations. We'd love to hear more about those. If you could call us, 443-5221 or 1-800-478-5666 and share those observations with us, what you know about sea ice and how it's changed over the years, perhaps what you've been seeing just this winter in terms of hunting conditions and such out on the sea ice. Please give us a call and join the conversation. And Rick, just to clarify, though, even though that satellite data only goes back 40 years, you do have other sources that go back a couple hundred years almost, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, the satellite information gives us this daily values, but a lot of effort has been put into going back through older sources of information. Now, that can include and does include things like, ship logs. This could be from, Coast Guard cutters from the early part of the 20th century, all the way back to whaling vessels in the 19th century. Whaling, much like the commercial crabbers, in our day, like to work near the ice edge, and those logs have been mined for information on where the ice was. Much of the information for the Arctic that was gathered during the Cold War is now available to researchers, and that information has been all put together. And of course, even before there were satellites, National Oceanographic and Meteorological Agencies were producing sea ice analysis. Again, not at the daily level, but frequently weekly or at least twice a month kind of thing. And much of that information has been pulled together into the project that was completed several years ago at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. And that's now available online. It's the Alaska Historical Sea Ice Atlas, and that has estimates of the average sea ice extent, actually the average sea ice concentration, so from none up to 100% coverage, all the way back to 1850. And, I've often wondered, well, how good is that data back, in the 1800s? But so individual months might be questionable, but there was a surprisingly lot of activity, especially, starting in the 1860s in western and northern Alaska. Again, a lot of those whaling ships kept very detailed information. So while it's not as good, of course, not as detailed as what we get from satellites, we do have a reasonable idea of what sea ice was doing at the monthly time scale back, you know, back to our great-great-great-grandparents' day. And that's really quite remarkable and really helps to put the very low sea ice that we've seen this winter into that very long context, much longer than any one of us has any memory of.
And again, an unprecedented winter that we've seen this year in terms of sea ice coverage across the Bering, Chukchi, and Beaufort Seas. But there was another year in recent memory, Rick, that you kind of compared this year or this winter to. Could you kind of share more about the similarities and differences between this year and 2001?
So, sure. So, prior to this year, 2001 had the lowest February sea ice extent. And during 2001, we actually did have, in the middle of the month, we did have largely ice-free seas, say from the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta across to St. Lawrence Island. And even north of St. Lawrence Island for a while, there was little to no ice. This is, again, mid-February of 2001. The big difference of 2001 compared to this past February, there was much more ice on the Chukotka side of the coast. This year, very little ice. In 2001, there was significantly more. There was also more ice in the Bering Strait in February 2001 than we had this year. We never got to that where we had that open water extending well north of the strait this year. Didn't have that in 2001. Norton Sound is very complex, as often is the case in sea ice, but there was probably somewhat more ice in 2001 in Norton Sound than in this past February. When we put it all together, though, 2001, somewhat similar, but overall, looking at the whole Bering Sea, nowhere near as low ice as we had this year.
Understood. Thank you, Rick. And again, this is Rick Thoman joining us here on KNOM's Exchange. He's from the National Weather Service, Alaska region, and we are talking about sea ice, weather conditions, climate patterns going on throughout this winter and the past several decades, going back through satellite data and more. If you'd like to join the conversation, please share your input or insights about sea ice, anything that you're seeing out near your community when hunting or just in general, 443-5221, 1-800-478-5666, or you can always email us, exchange@knom.org. So, Rick, the question that I think everyone is waiting for is, what do you believe is causing or contributing to this low, unprecedentedly low winter in terms of sea ice coverage?
So, yeah, that's the million-dollar question, isn't it, Davis? So, because really understanding why we've had this is going to be our key to anticipating this in the future. And that's really important. We have several clues. As I mentioned to start, the Bering Sea has been the ocean surface temperature significantly warmer than the long-term average, really since the latter part of 2013. It's now 2018. So we've got multiple years now of warmth in the Bering Sea. And this has gone on so long, it's not just at the surface, but that's worked its way down through the water in the Bering Sea to a considerable depth. So, you know, we had that last summer. And then as we moved into the fall, of course, we went into a weather pattern not dissimilar to what we had the winter of 2016-17, early in the season, where we had fairly persistent storminess. This year, kind of like last year, none of the storms were super strong. We didn't have anything quite like the 2011 or 13 storms, although there was flooding in some communities during the fall, most notably in the Bering Straits region, the flooding in November, Gullivan and Shishmaref but some low-level type events. But from the ocean side, of course, it was stormy enough to keep that the ocean churned up. We kept bringing in lots of warm air from the south. So we had a stormy fall. We had warm temperatures to start going into the fall, starting in October. Persistent, if not extreme, storminess. That went on with only a few breaks. Occasionally the pattern would change, but we never got into an extended period with those cold north winds blowing. We'd get that for a few days, but then they'd reverse and another storm would come along. So we've had this relatively stormy pattern. As I mentioned at the start, trying to quantify, put a number on how stormy it is sounds like something that should be pretty simple. It's actually a little bit harder because you have to take into account things like the intensity of the storm. The track of the storm can matter quite a bit. So we've made a first effort at this, and we'll be doing more work on this. But it sure looks like that while this is certainly was above normal stormy season for the Bering Sea and southern Chukchi, probably not at record level. Looks like there's been, several winters over the past 70 years that have featured more storminess over the region. But we know for sure that even in those years that were at least somewhat stormier than the winter we've just gone through, the sea ice was nowhere close to this low. And that really brings it back to the oceans contributing to this. And we did our first work on this does seem to show in the past the Bering Sea temperatures near Alaska down to the Pribilofs were generally going into the fall. They were cool enough that if we could get the appropriate weather conditions, so if we'd get those cold north winds or at least keep the storms far south so that they didn't keep bringing warm air into the northern Bering Sea and southern Chukchi, that the water was cold enough that the ice would form. Now we're starting to see some evidence that these warm sea surface temperatures mean that the atmosphere has to be in that cold pattern longer in order to get the sea ice to form. Again, longer compared to, say, what it would have taken 20 or 40 years ago. So this is an area that's going to be of a lot of research interest because we really need to understand why in order to provide the best outlooks for the future. My hope is that in the future, we'll be able to give an estimate here as we go, say, a past Labor Day of, okay, here's an idea for sea ice for the coming winter. So that's where we're going with that, but a lot of work ahead of us to get there.
Absolutely. Thank you, Rick. And as we're getting close to wrapping up here, we have a few more minutes to take calls. If you would like to join our conversation here on KNOM's Exchange about sea ice, give us a call, 443-5221 or 1-800-478-5666. And Rick, kind of in that vein, what are you predicting for future winters to come, and how can we be better prepared for seasons like this?
Well, I think one thing is for sure, in the world that we live, there's a trend in most things, and ocean temperatures are certainly one of them. And so while we have no reason to think that there's been sea ice this low in the Bering Sea in the last 150-plus winters, we have no reason to think that it's going to take that long for this to reoccur. So at the community level, for individuals, we really need to be thinking that every year is not going to be like this, this low and so late to form. But it's likely, my guess is if you call me up in the old folks home in 20 years, and I would be surprised if we hadn't had a year similar to this sometime between then and now. So I think we really need to be prepared. This isn't going to be every year, but we're likely to see winters like this again sooner rather than later.
And in addition to the work you're doing, Rick, with the National Weather Service, there are some additional resources out there. We've seen the sea ice for walrus outlook kind of start up in the last few years, which has been great. I've got some comments here from residents in Savoonga and Gamble mentioning, 5 miles out, however many miles out away from shore, they're seeing ice. They're talking about the boats going out to get walrus, how many walrus they're seeing. The quality of the ice, for example, from Clarence Irigu Jr., he wrote last week that out near Gamble, the ice is slush near the land, and about a mile out, he sees that it's thicker, but still not very big. And these observations can be submitted and gathered online. Can you kind of talk a little bit more about this sea ice outlook for walrus outlook?
Yeah, so the sea ice for walrus outlook is a... It's a joint venture. The Weather Service helps produce this. NOAA Sea Grant and Gay Sheffield are involved in this, and this is all coordinated through ARCUS, which is the Arctic Research Consortium of the United States, which is run out of UAF. And through their website, you can submit observations. Photographs, of course, are great. But even just, a couple of sentences about what you're seeing can be great. And, of course, we have a multitude of ways that you can pass that information on to us at the National Weather Service if you like. There's a place on the Forecast Office's website that you can submit your observations. If you're on Twitter, any observations, just use that hashtag AKWeather. And those that Twitter is monitored by all of the forecast offices. So we'll get it that way, and you can always email or pick up the phone and call. So we like nothing better than getting those observations from folks on the ground because it really helps to put what we can see with all the high-tech tools, really bring it down to the community level.
Right. So get your pens ready because we've got a lot of email addresses and phone numbers coming up here in a quick moment. So for the Sea Ice for Walrus Outlook, I've been told that you can email Lisa Sheffield Guy your comments, images, observations directly. Email that to Lisa Guy. Her email address is lisa@arcus.org. And then, of course, the Sea Ice for Walrus Outlook also has its own Facebook page where you can get their weekly updates. So those are great. And, Rick, if we're trying to submit information about Western Alaska weather forecasts, I believe Ed Plum and yourself are kind of collecting input and feedback about that. Where should our listeners submit that or who should they submit it to?
So, yes, if you go over to most of the KNOM listening area, this will be the Fairbanks Forecast Office, and right there on the front page, down at the bottom, there is a Submit a Report link, and you can fill that out and type in whatever you have to say. And the nice thing about that is going to go, when you hit the send button there, that is going to go right to the forecast desk that's staffed 7 days a week, 365 days a year, 24 hours a day. So that will immediately go to the forecasters, and you can bypass any kind of, oh, it has got to go to somebody and they have to look at it and then pass it on. That will go right to the forecasters within a few seconds of you hitting that send button. So a great way to get that out.
And, Rick, if our listeners would prefer not to fill out an email report or not can't use the Internet and get on the website, how can they reach you by phone or Ed via phone?
The best place number to call will be 907-458-3708. And that, again, will ring right on the forecaster desk. And that, again, staff 24 hours a day, 365 days a year, and you can be guaranteed a person is going to pick up that phone.
Excellent. Thank you, Rick. Well, we're running out of time here. It is 11:30 on KNOM's Exchange. And that's Rick Toman again from the National Weather Service, the Alaska region. Thank you so much, Rick, for joining us today and talking about sea ice.
Great. Thanks for having me, Davis.
Absolutely. And we're going to get back to our regularly scheduled programming now. Don't forget, though, Exchange is coming up again 2 weeks from today, the third Tuesday of April. So make sure you tune in to KNOM from 11 to 11:30 for that.